Welcome to the Infinite Lives and Games podcast. I'm your host, Victor Diaz, also known by my gamer tag as Seth Infinite. Today, we have someone who I can't wait to speak and catch up with, because it's been a minute. I remember seeing this dude fly up the ranks in competitive Smash Brothers. It told me a lot about his persistence, his hunger to learn and get better. A funny and strong individual. I also remember his passion for films and this legendary game which we are going to get into shortly. Jake is this wonderful man's name. He goes by his gamer tag, Jaku, born and raised in the Bronx. You can find him on his Twitch channel, twitch.tv/LordJaku. The game we will be diving into on this episode is one I myself am very fond of, and honestly, they don't make them like this no more, man. They really don't. Let's get lost in Dead Space. Dead Space is a science fiction action horror video game developed by Visceral Games and published by EA Electronic Arts for the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Windows. It is in third person and the first in the Dead Space franchise. Topics to be discussed include Korean films, friendships, horror, immersion, and accepting of ideologies. Now, as always, I like to start off every podcast episode thanking my guest, because this person's story, this person's outlook and feelings and things on life will definitely inspire anybody, or could even encourage them to get out there and start playing their games, or even go on to make and do great things. So, Jake, man, I really, really appreciate your time. It's gonna be a good one. It's gonna be an awesome one.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be good.
As always, I like to start off the podcast episode with five questions. You can ask them however way you want. It can be short answer, long answer. It doesn't matter, as long as, you know, we get the point across and get the energy going for the rest of the podcast. So if you are ready to go, good sir, we can do it.
Yeah, I'm ready when you are.
So the first question I want to ask is, what's your honest opinion on Fortnite?
Fortnite is crazy, for one. Whoever competes in that game professionally or is even breaking into it, I give like serious props to, because that game is incredibly mechanically and I want to say mentally demanding. You know, there's a lot going on, I feel like, at all times, especially when you're fighting against someone who's like more than just your intermediate like builder. When the building starts going, like, that's where I'm tapping out. Like, yeah. Not that I've played Fortnite in a long time, but
absolutely, man. I stopped playing when there was buildings and stuff in like seconds, like right in my face.
Yeah, that's where I'd be like, dude, what is happening? Like, what? Literally, what just happened? I die, and my boys would be laughing at me. You know, I could hear them laughing at me in my head. You know, I'd be like, dude, what am I supposed to do? He built a gray wall on me, like. What is that?
You got a pistol, like, in your hand. You're just like, okay then, man.
Dude, I'm sitting there hacking at the fucking bottom, and he's already made another wall. And I'm like, bro, come down, fight me.
Look at me, fight me.
Fight the ground. Me. Yeah.
Forget the wall, man. He built a whole structure already.
Yeah, dude, I'm like, I'm out. I'm not doing this. But I think that it is very, I think it's cool how inclusive the game is to, like, you know, real, obviously, you know, like real people. You know, we have Ariana Grande, we have Dwayne Johnson in the game, you know, but also like fictional characters like Spider-Man, like Green Goblin, Venom, Carnage, you know, like I think stuff like that is, I think it's really cool how it's able to really blend in like so many iconic figures across like so many different forms of media and like,
absolutely.
Put them into one game. Like, you don't really see anything like that. And I think the last game to, not the last game, but one of the biggest games to really do that is Smash, you know, like,
Great comparison. Like, yep.
It really is the Smash Brothers of shooters.
It's doing its thing. And I feel the same way. I think it's cool with all the characters, with all the content and constant support and all that stuff. And it's definitely good for our generation, like this new generation of gamers and stuff, but yeah, the wall building and all that stuff, yeah, I'm gonna turn the other way.
Yeah, it's not for me. Like, yeah. It's not for me. So, but there's a lot of money in Fortnite, so money, like,
shmoney.
Money. Yeah, like, dude.
I don't know what I'm doing with my life, but oh man, these people.
Yeah, bro. Like millions of dollars in cash prizes at these like major tournaments.
Which again, you know, it's cool that they support all that stuff. There's not a lot of companies that do. I mean, they do, no, but
it's got a massive backing. Like, yeah. So it's impressive to say the least. Mm-hmm. It's impressive that they have so much money backing these tournaments. And then it's impressive to like know that there are people out there who can really compete at that level to even make that kind of money at these tournaments, you know, because bro, I know if you threw me into the circuit with these kids, I'd be like, bro, what am I supposed to do? Like you're just building on me. What am I, come down and fight me, fight me.
You know, like, pick up any random gun.
Yeah, bro. Like I shoot one time and then that's it. Like the build, I'm build it on. I'm done.
Oh,
you know, lock me up. Oh, I think that's where I stand with Fortnite. You know?
Cool. I feel that. 100%. So the next question is: now listen, man. We're all here. We're all at that moment where we're adulting. We're doing our jobs. We are life is hitting us, and it's not letting up. That's for damn sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at this mountain of games that I have backed up that I haven't gotten to, and I feel ashamed for a lot of them. But I want to ask you, man, what's your mountain look like? What are some of the games that you haven't gotten to or haven't gotten the chance to just really dive deep into and just really enjoy?
Okay. definitely Tales of Arise for one. Mm-hmm. I've got like no cap. I'm looking at it right now. 63 minutes of playtime. Oh. And that was just the introduction. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go play Apex. You know, or I had to go. I don't even remember. I just get lost in like losing time. Hollow Knight for one. If you never play Hollow Knight, please give that game like a try. That game is a masterpiece. If you love,
I've seen it. I've seen gameplay. Oh my gosh,
phenomenal! It is so good. On top of Hollow Knight, I've never beaten the. I've beaten the game, but I've never beaten the this thing called the Pantheon, where you fight all of the bosses like back to back, and it's like 40 bosses. And if you die, like that sucks. You got to go back to the beginning and fight the first boss again, all the way to the last boss, who's incredibly unforgiving. You know that game just—it's
a commitment.
It's hard. It's hard. It's a commitment too. You know, like, and then time loses itself, and then it ends up on the back burner. Like, I know Dan is listening to this, and he's thinking to himself, like, "Yeah, bro, I beat the Pantheon. Jake didn't do it. Like, you know, he holds out about everybody, bro. He's like, yeah, you know, I beat the Pantheon. You know, it's on my resume. I beat the Pantheon. So, you know, but definitely Hollow Knight." And I want to say Monster Hunter Rise, you know, I love Monster Hunter. I've been playing Monster Hunter since Monster Hunter 3 on the 3DS, which had some of the worst controls I think I've ever played in a game in my life.
Oh,
yes. But it was still fun. You know, I feel like even though we put some time into this one, I feel like, you know, things just
they
took over, you know, like life takes over. Sometimes other games, sometimes, you know, work, wifey. You know, like
whoever your significant wifey. Other is, you know.
Yeah, dude, sucks. I definitely would like to get back to playing that. Then there are games coming out that I'm like, yo, this game's coming out and it's gonna hit the back burner.
Oh my god, no,
like yo. Horizon Forbidden West, like,
oh, dude, don't even talk about Horizon. I still have my shit wrapped up in its plastic, bro. Like. It's that sad, man.
It's still mint.
It's still mint with everything. It's just you can smell, like when you open the case and you smell that brand new smell. It's probably still like
brand new.
I have that. I have a couple other ones. Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, Wolfenstein 2, to be more specific. I'm looking at them right now. And they're staring at me.
They're looking at you like, bro, open me up, please.
Yeah, dude. It's, yeah. And there's a lot to it, too, because like we mentioned, it's a commitment. Things come up. You get lost in other stuff. Like, hey, somebody asks you to go pay Apex or whatever it is, and you're just like, fuck it, all right. You know, you go,
man.
Yeah. You're being pulled left and right.
Fuck it, I guess I'll just get on Apex and play with the boys, you know? And it's fun, but then part of me is like, dude, you literally got this game and you have like under half an hour in it, and it's been a month. You know? Like that's a part of me that's like it's like kicking me in the side of the head. It's like, dude, play the fucking game.
And you know what's the funny thing is, I wake up with that feeling too, and I'm also like, should I feel a way for spending $75? Well, now it's 75, not 60 anymore, but yeah, you know, on games that I know I'm not gonna play. Am I wasting money? Like, I ask myself this, I'm like, you know, it's just gonna sit there. Just collect,
bro. It's a bad feeling sometimes.
Oh man, we'll move on to the next question, man. I'm feeling a heart attack. Just they're all looking at me now. Let me turn away. Let me just
open me, bro. Please.
Yeah. Do you prefer to play single players or with your friends in co-op?
I think it depends on the type of game that I'm playing, for sure. On the topic of Apex, like. Mm-hmm. Apex, you obviously can play by yourself, and that's totally valid if you enjoy doing that. Like, it's a different experience when you're playing with somebody else, you know. And especially when you're playing with like your boys who are like uber competitive with each other, you know. Like, shout outs to my boys Dan.
Shout out DK Dan.
My boy, it's my brother. You know, like we'd be getting into a match, and after every fight, we'd be like, hey, "Yo, what's he damage?" Someone would be like 400, someone would be like 300, and then we'll be like, I don't want to say what my damage is. You'd be like, nah, come on, say your damage, bro. You know, so shout outs to them, you know, especially shout outs to Dan, you know, like,
that's your brother. That's day one, like, man. That's day one,
bro. Since I, you know, went to college with him, like, that's my boy, grinding it out in Smash from day one. We sucked in that game. We were bad. And I remember when I first started, you know, really getting into competitive Smash, I was still learning, you know, like what tech meant, what a short hop was, or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I remember bringing it up to Dan. I'd be like, dude, yeah, you got a short hop. You know, you got to learn these tech. And he'd be like, what is that? What is tech? What is tech? What is that? I don't get it. What is it? Show me the tech. What is that? I remember his first time seeing the Ding Dong. Rest in peace to that. And hopefully with Donkey Kong, seeing the Ding Dong. He came up to me with his phone, with a YouTube video that titled "How to Do the Ding Dong." He went, "What is this? What is this? How do I do this? How do I do? I want to do this." And I went, "Watch the video, man. You could do it." He went, No. You tell me how to do this." You know? But I remember grinding it out with him every day. Like, I remember junior year of college, especially, like a tournament, like almost every night. We was putting food on the table, though. That was grocery money.
You know? I remember seeing you guys going to those tournaments and just like, you guys flew through the ranks, man. Much respects for the grind and the sweat and just the perseverance.
Yeah,
that you guys put in, because you guys, man, you know, at first, like, we were able to beat you guys, but then you guys were just on another level, and there was just nothing but respect there, man. Nothing but respects.
Yeah, man. It was fun. I had to say, I definitely met some of, like, I had some of the best memories playing Smash, and obviously that was a multiplayer game, you know.
That's what it is. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like the feeling of grinding it out, being with your boys, backing you up, and just getting into it with the boys and ranking up and doing everything together. It's just nothing like it.
Yeah, bro. It's like a high that, like, you kind of crave, like, in almost any game you're going to play with your boys, you know. On the topic of single-player games, I feel like there are games that, like, are meant to be experienced by yourself, you know?
Absolutely.
Like Resident Evil for one, Dead Space, which of course we'll get into later. But like, I think I couldn't imagine playing like RE4 or the RE2 remake with somebody else on my back.
Yeah,
I feel like it would pull me out of it. You know, like that first time seeing Mr. X like walking at you from down the hall, and, you know, you shoot off his dinky little hat, and you're like, ha. And then you realize that he's like, no, I'm going to kill you, bro. And it's like,
I'm not fucking around.
I'm dead. I'm not fucking around. Come here. You know, like, it's like a really pissed off mom who's just walking at you all the time.
Yeah, dude. They have like a bunch of mods for that, dude. The tyrant.
Oh, yeah. He's walking around at X going, give it to you, please. Yeah, X going, give it to you. He going, give it to you. Like, that shit is funny. But yeah, I couldn't imagine like playing a game like that and having someone at my back. Obviously, of course, it will come with its own merits. You know, maybe there'd be funny moments, but like, I feel like in those moments where the atmosphere is so important and the setting is so important and the conditions that you're in, like those things matter, especially in a game like that, where you really want to take everything in, like really assess the situation that you're in and really take in like the spot that you're put in, you know?
Yeah. The atmosphere, the immersion, the tense moments, games that are meant to be for single player, like even God of War.
Oh yeah. God of War is amazing.
Like, yeah. And like imagining that with two people, like somebody controls Atreus, like, yeah, it would be kind of cool, but
I'd be like, nah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think especially in the case of God of War, you know, like you're coming into the shoes of Kratos, like from, you know, the series we all know, like growing up on the PS2, PS3, he's an angry ass dude, you know, and now he's got a kid, like another kid, you know, and it's like,
oh man,
the shoes are different.
It definitely hits differently. You know, what's funny? That was one of the games on my mountain of backlogs. Not until, I kid you not, bro, last year, just a couple months ago in October, I started playing it.
Oh, bro, so good.
It's so good. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's really good. I feel like the pacing, and I think the fact that you can't control Atreus is a big part, you know, that you don't get to really play as him. Because, you know, like at this point in Kratos' life, he's like more experienced. He's like trying to get his anger under control. You know, he's older, you know, like, and
he's a father.
Yeah, he's a dad, bro. He's a dad. Yeah, he got a scraggly ass beard and everything, you know? And, you know, like, I just think the direction they took it in was really well thought out, especially when it comes to gameplay, too. It's something in the beginning that he says where he's like, you only fire when I tell you to fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of plays into the game. Like, more often than not, he only fires when you tell
him to
fire.
Quite literally. You know? Yep.
Yeah. And, like, that level of experience like translates into the game, you know, and I don't want to talk about it too much.
No, that's a whole other podcast episode, bro. Yeah. That game. Yeah.
Ooh, if you haven't played God of War, please go play that game. It's a masterpiece.
It's a whole, I still haven't finished it. I'm getting there.
You gotta finish it. It's so good, bro.
I'm getting there, but we'll move on to the next question. What is, now I'm gonna give you some space here because this is kind of hard, but what is one of your favorite or top three favorite cutscenes in gaming?
Okay, so before I get into the cutscene, just to give some background details, the cutscene is from The Witcher 3. I had never read any of the books or played the previous games when The Witcher 3 had come out in like 2015 or 2016, whatever year it was, and I was like, dude, this game looks so sick, I gotta play it. So I played it, didn't really know who everybody was, you know, and I didn't read because I was like, dude, who reads in games, you know? Like, you know, so I played it and I loved the game and I was like, let me go back and get a different perspective. So I read the books and then I watched some videos on the whole story of like the first and second game because they're literally unplayable. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking about playing the Witcher games because you want to get into the universe, don't play the first and second game. Save your money because they play like dog water, like literal rhino water. It's bad. Just watch a video, please. But, you know, when I come back with that new and fresh perspective from the novels and the previous games, there's this one cutscene in The Witcher 3 that stands out. And I don't want to like spoil it too much for anybody because I think everyone should experience it at some point if they really want to get into that kind of game, which it's like a 100-hour commitment, just saying, like if you play that game, enjoy the next 100 hours. But there's this cutscene where Geralt finds someone who is like an adoptive daughter to him, and you have been going through hell and high water to find this character. Turmoil and heartbreak and some really cool boss fights up until this point. And when you finally find her, it's like kind of heartbreaking. It's like finding your child dead.
It's like, imagine finding your child like dead in a bed. Geralt is this really strong and resilient character throughout like the whole game. He's witty here and there, you know. Sly remarks, you know, like, I'm Geralt of Rivia, I'm a witcher, you know, like, you know, like, and something he says throughout the game, especially when people start to like press him on like his opinions on things, is that he first became a witcher when he was a child, that he was stripped of all emotions. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that you really see that that's like, it's a farce, it was a lie, because he breaks down and he's bawling. You really feel it, because it's like this really strong character that you start to resonate with really hits like rock bottom in that moment.
He's human after all, like he
feels. Yeah, it's that exactly. It's such a human moment, like, and I feel like I don't see a lot of like really human moments in a lot of games nowadays. Mm-hmm. But that one cutscene really like hit home for me. I thought it was so well done.
I definitely look for that kind of stuff too. When you get pulled away from the experience, you want to look at something good. You don't want to just like, oh, all right, it's just another cutscene. I'm just kidding. You want to see what's going on. You want to feel what's going on with the emotions, with the world, with the characters, with the buildup. You're definitely right. They don't make a lot of games like that nowadays. They're like movies, and I want to get into this in later on in the podcast. I like that. I like the human aspects in those cutscenes, and I definitely respect that. I also respect The Witcher 3. I've never played it before, but I've heard countless things about that game.
It's good. It's good. And if you play it on PC, it's even better, because just, bro, mods make the game sometimes. It just makes the game so much better sometimes. I think another cutscene. This game came out long ass time ago. Mm-hmm. And I know me and Rio have briefly spoken about how much we love this game. It's Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker. And I know he's got that tattoo of Nehru's jewel on his
shoulder. He does. Oh, man. Shout out to Rio, man. If you're listening. Shout out to Rio.
That game is phenomenal. And at the time when it came out, it got a lot of shit. For its art style, for looking too cartoony. Mm-hmm. Like,
totally. Get it.
You know, it's Legend of Zelda. It's supposed to be hardcore, you know, like, but that game was deep. And I think the thing about it is that it was the first Zelda game to really delve into Ganondorf's character and like his actual motivations. Because, you know, playing, you know, Ocarina of Time and all those games, like, Ganon is just the bad guy.
He's the bad guy, period. Yeah. You just have to get to him.
Yeah. Get the bad guy, save the girl, beat the game, you know, like, but it was the first Zelda game that really made Ganondorf human. It really humanized him and his motivations, you know, like,
yeah.
If you've never played Wind Waker out there, I don't know what you guys are doing.
I played the HD remaster on the Wii U.
Oh yeah,
I have the my gamepad has all the Legend of Zelda like inscriptions or whatever you want to
That's sick.
Yeah that's super sick. Dope.
So there's a cutscene in that game where it's like just before the final boss, and he's talking about what it was like to live in the Gerudo Desert, and how it was just a harsh and awful place to live. And it was the polar opposite of the lands that the Hylians lived in, you know, in Hyrule. Mm-hmm. Because of that, winds in Hyrule carried fortune and life, and the winds in the Gerudo Valley carried death. And that's it. So for him and for his people, he went to war against the Hylians, and that did not end up good. And it's really cool to see the fact that he states, like, I coveted the winds that were, you know, flowing through Hyrule. You know, I wanted that for me and my people. And
you feel that.
You feel that. And it's like, wow. And he's like, now at the end of Hyrule, at the end of what was that kingdom, he finally has it. But like, what did it cost? Because like, the whole kingdom's underwater, it's under the sea. No matter what, like, that doesn't, he's lost, you know, and he's lost himself in this passion of his that he says that he's wanted for his people. You know, he's kind of convinced himself that like, This is all justifiable, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That war, that sacrifice was justified, which in its own way, yes, it was. But it really makes you take a step back and look at that character outside of just being a villain. He's like a real person outside of just being like, man, give me the Triforce.
I'm the bad guy.
I'm gonna fuck this place up. Like, yeah. You know, it was really cool to see that sort of character development, especially at the end of the game. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
totally. And it's funny because it's a, like you said, it was a cartoony game. So you don't expect a lot of oomph, like realness.
A lot of weight to it.
No, that game was definitely, it got emotional at times too, like even when you first leave the island and he's like waving,
you say goodbye to grandma.
Yeah, I'm like, bro.
I was like, nah, don't do me like this. I want to say goodbye to grandma.
I'm like, damn, man.
Yeah, bro, like, no. She mad small. I was like, bro, how's she gonna get up to that ladder? Like, please. How's she gonna get up that ladder?
Yo, go play Wind Waker, man. If you haven't played that, you're interested in Legend of Zelda, go play Wind Waker. Do yourself a favor.
Yeah. And then I think the last cutscene that I would think is like one of my favorite. It's between two of them, man. I gotta say. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you played the most recent Spider-Man game on the PS4.
No. It's on the backlog.
Bro. God, man. I got you. It's good. I don't want to spoil that. There's a cutscene in there which is so well done. It sets up the pace for the future so beautifully. You already know, you as like a person who knows Spider-Man will be like, oh, I know where this is going. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the way that it's like blended into the story is done so well because you're rooting for the opposite side at some point. And you just know how it's going to go down, you know? They do it so well.
All right, we're going to move on to the last question. This was actually kind of a big one, too. What do you think about video games going into, like, a service now? So you know how Netflix and Disney Plus and all that stuff? So they're saying that video games are going to go into this service kind of thing. What do you think about that whole topic?
It's kind of icky. I'm not gonna lie. That's kind of smelly, you know. it's interesting that you bring this up because I've spoken with obviously people that, you know, work in the film industry about video games, and obviously it's always talked about, you know, video games as a certain medium.
Mm-hmm.
Even Guillermo del Toro talks about it sometimes. Games are like kind of akin to films sometimes, and on other fronts sometimes they even replace films. It's sometimes in good ways and sometimes in bad ways, you know, like the order 1886. That game is bad. There's like 4 minutes of gameplay, but a lot of people talk about how, like, you know, games are the new medium for films. You know,
it's crazy that you bring this up because this was definitely going to be,
it's going to resurface. Yeah. But as a service, it's like a little extra, bro. Like, are they charging me monthly to go to the movie theater? Like, you know, like, you could charge me like $20 a month to go to the movie theater and I still got to pay to go to AMC. Like, please. Yeah, don't make me do that.
I feel the same way, bro. I feel like, you know, dude, that's money, bro. It's too much.
Yeah, it is. I feel like that's really what drove me to like build a PC. During the height of COVID, I was like, man, my PS4 is kicking rocks right now. She's like, I turn her on, she'd be like, you know, like. I'd be like, damn, she's dying. I gotta do something, you know? So I was like, do I really wanna like keep investing into this, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, this subscription. I was like, well, I can just be on PC and play all the games I'm playing here, but like on PC, you know?
On PC.
And I had told myself, I was like, I'm not gonna get another console, you know. Then they announced God of War Ragnarok. And I was like, damn, I want to play that. And then they announced Horizon Forbidden West. I was like, damn, I want to play that. And then they announced Spider-Man 2. And I was like, damn, I need a PS5.
You know? Like, yo, for real.
I had told myself that I'm going to try to avoid the subscriptions just because I'll get my PS5 for the exclusives, which I did, you know. Mm-hmm. Luckily, somehow I got it, you know.
I still haven't gotten mine, man, bro. It pissed me off.
I got it through GameStop, bro. That was
crazy. Yo, that's crazy. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, bro.
It was rough.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah. And then I told myself, I was like, I got my PC for everything else. Right?
Yeah. So you basically have all Microsoft.
I have both, basically. Yeah. You know, does what an Xbox One does and more.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it's funny. I built my PC not too long ago myself, too. It wasn't during COVID. It was actually before COVID. And I love my baby. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, bro. Me and Larry. Oof. My PC's name, Larry.
Larry? Oh, my God. Her name is Baby.
He's
baby.
Ugly. Yeah, Larry's ugly.
The only reason why she's called Baby Baby is because I have baby number one, and she would be pissed off if she's number two. So,
gotta come on, that's funny. Yeah, you gotta keep it first, bro.
But yo, I think we got the energy going, bro. It's in. Whew, this is gonna be. It's gonna be one hell of an episode. But once again, bro, I really want to thank you. And just for coming out here and talk about this game, because this game is huge, man. This game, I beat this thing, I 100%ed this thing twice.
So many times. I've played Dead Space,
bro. Oh, my God. So yeah, the first thing I want to start off with is, I mean, you could kind of go through your gaming history if you would like. Small synopsis of, like, how'd you get into gaming? And then how did you get into Dead Space? Like, did you buy it? Did you find somewhere? Were you hyped for it when it was releasing? So give me all that, man.
Okay. So how I got into gaming was one day I just woke up and I was 5 years old. And I'm sure everybody can relate to this. You ever just feel like, yo, you just wake up one day, you're like, bro, I'm four. You know, like, what's good? You know? I'm 4 years old. I'm in this four. Bitch.
You put your hands on your sides and you're like, yeah, I'm four.
Yeah, what's good? You know, like, nothing else matters. You don't know how you ended up at four, but you're four, you know?
That's where your life started. That's it.
Yeah. While I started, I woke up one day, I was four, you know? Like, so I remember, and I don't remember too much back then because, you know, memory's escaping me. I remember walking into my sister's room and she had a Sega Genesis and she's playing Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Oh.
And that's one of the first games. Yes, yeah, a classic. That's one of the first games I ever played or attempted to play.
Right.
And I'd
right.
Like, I'd come in and I'd be like, can I play your game? She'd be like, no. Mom says you can't play games, you know?
Oh,
and then the fight would ensue. You know, I love my sister to death though. But you know, mom says you can't play games, and this is my Sega, you know.
What?
And so I would just watch Sonic in the back, you know, be like, yo, I need to play this. Then somehow we ended up with an N64. Ooh. I don't know how. But
was that one yours?
It was still hers. I claimed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was my father's friend's N64 and he left it. And my dad didn't know what a console was, you know. He didn't know what any of that was, video games. So he was like, I don't give a shit, you use it. So, you know, I remember we had Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time on that N64. That game really changed a lot for me. I was like, yo, I'm this elf dude and I'm just fucking shit up, you know? Oh, like, and it felt like I was really entering a new world as a kid. Mm-hmm. You look at it nowadays, you're like, dude, this game is literally just triangles and circles. Like, what are you talking about? You know? But as a kid, when your imagination is just running wild, when you finally see Ganon for the first time at the end of the game.
Actually scared, man.
Yeah, as a kid, I was like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm looking at. And even when I'm looking at it today, I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. You know? But as a kid, it was like horrifying.
Oh, totally.
Like, you don't see anything. It's just the white eyes glowing in the back. And you only ever see Ganon a little bit when the lightning flashes.
Yeah.
And you can see like his body, you know, like.
Just thinking
stuff
about
like
it.
That is really so cool as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where I really started getting into games as a kid was Ocarina of Time, which I'm sure is a first for a lot of people, you know.
No, that game is golden, like, man.
Yeah, it's like regarded as like the father for like a lot of games or like the template for a lot of games, you know, even today, you know. That's where it started, I want to say. But then it was that Majora's Mask, Smash 64, you know, Melee.
Go through them.
Bro, I remember my first time. I was like, yo, I'm so nice in Smash 64. I was like, yeah. I was eight. This is when I already moved from the Bronx upstate. And I was like, yo, I'm mad nice at 64, you know, like in my little kid mind. And my neighbors at the time, one of them was like, yo, see me on my turf. And as a kid, I was like, bro, I'll mess you up. Hello?
Like, do you?
I'm 8 years old. I will mess you up, you know? And then he introduced me to the GameCube. And I didn't know the GameCube was a thing. I was still on the N64. Oh. And the GameCube was like 2 years into its lifespan. Wow. So, like, it had good games already. Like, it had
Melee.
What did it have? It had Melee. Yeah, it had Sunshine, Goated.
Oh, my God.
Luigi's Mansion. I didn't know about any of that. Yeah, dude, Double Dash. I didn't know about any of this, you know, and I went over his house and his little brother would end up becoming one of my lifelong friends. He was like, yeah, we'll play on my turf. And he boots up Melee. And I was like, what the hell is this? Why does it look so good? I was like, it looks so real. And I was a Mario player, funny enough.
Oh, hey, let's go.
I played Fox since day one, but in Melee, in N64, I played more Mario.
Yeah.
But especially because I thought Fox was so weird. I was like, why they put a at first, I didn't even know he was a fox. I thought he was a chihuahua. And I was like, why would they name a chihuahua fox? And my sister's like, it's a fox, you idiot. You know? So
that's funny,
you know, bro. I was like, I'm gonna play Mario. He's cool, you know. So I played the both of them. I got tossed. He ragged my shit, you know. And I remember thinking as a kid, I was so pissed. I was like, dude,
he beat me,
and I'm eight. Like,
you know? Holding on to that,
yeah, I'm holding on to that. I'm 8 years old, and he beat my ass, you know. And that's what really got me into, like, I guess, you know, multiplayer games and then games in general. But for Dead Space, it was this one movie, one of my favorite directors of all time, John Carpenter. He does his own rendition of The Thing. It's like an old, like, 1950s movie called, like, The Thing from Another World. And it's really bad. It's terrible. but he does such a good job of, like, creating horror without showing you the monster, you know. And you know, if you were to watch it today, you'd see the monster and you'd be like, damn, that looks bad, you know. But even that, it's like, there are still parts of it that still really hold up. But back on track, he does such a good job of creating horror from nothing, from environment, from tone, from character interaction. And if you've never watched The Thing, you know, it's about this alien that can take the shape of things that it consumes, and it mimics them perfectly, to a T, perfectly. And its basic survival instinct is to consume and spread and create more copies of people. They find this thing buried in the Antarctic. It just, all hell breaks loose, you know. And then they do such a good job of, like, not telling you who gets turned first, like, who gets assimilated first into this thing, who does it copy first. And there's still theories out there to this day that, like, who's the first person to get turned, like, and it seems so obvious sometimes, but other times it's not.
All right, first off, you hitting off you're not good, man, because I've never watched this movie. And just by hearing you talk about it and talk about how making something out of nothing, which is one of the key points that I also want to get into later, about just the atmosphere and everything that has to do with horror, I need to watch this movie.
It's good. Yeah, you need to. It's good. Yeah. That movie got me into Dead Space.
That's cool.
When I first saw Dead Space or heard of it, I had a friend, like, when I was in middle school or whatever, I think, or was it high school? I can't remember. But I had wanted a PS3 so bad because of a game called Resistance,
Which was a good game, right?
It was good. It was good. You know, I enjoyed it. But friend at the time, or he's even still a friend now, but he was like, yeah, there's this game called Dead Space and it looks really cool. And it's like a horror game. And these monsters are made out of people. And I went, what? And he went, yeah, but they're aliens. I went, what in the way? So I looked it up. And the first thing that I noticed, I was like, wait a minute. This is literally the thing. Like, the Necromorphs are based off of the thing. And when you watch the movie, which I highly recommend, you know, you sit down with your girl or by yourself, watch it. Like, you immediately will be like, oh my God, it all makes sense. This is this the thing, the Necromorphs, I see it.
I gotta watch this now. Oh man.
Yeah. I was like, wow. You see so much inspiration from like John Carpenter and Ripley Scott with Alien in that game, creating fear out of nothing. It was something that I felt like Dead Space did really well. And that's what really got me into it.
That's cool.
Being isolated. Yeah. I feel like some of the strongest moments, especially in those movies, you know, like Alien, the thing, are when characters are alone. The original Alien, where I can't remember his name, but he's a guy with a hat and he's, you know, looking for a cat. He's looking for a cat and he looks up and there's like, you know, they're in like some sort of like drain system for the ship and there's chains hanging everywhere and he's by himself and it's like completely isolated, isolation. And in that moment, fear is created from nothing. And it's done so well, from like atmosphere, like audio design, set design. You know, Dead Space does all of those things. It hits all of those things on the nail for me. Especially when I first saw it. So when I first got to play it, I was like, I'm scared, you know. I was scared. Like,
I'm like, were you legit scared? Because I was. Yeah,
you hear the creaking of this, like this. You hear the groans of this dead ship. You know, like you hear sometimes what sounds like whispering or someone calling Isaac's name. You know, like you'll hear the necromorphs in the vents so far away. And obviously, like, you know, playing the game more than one time, it loses that like horror factor, because you know where they're gonna spawn and all that. But like for that first run, you're like, wow, where the fuck is this thing coming from? Like, what happened? And I think they did such a good job of like set design and audio design and tone, hearing Isaac breathing, like
all right, let me pause you. Ooh man, let me pause you real quick. Hold on, because you mentioned some good stuff here. One thing is the fact that you say the first time you played it, right? It is definitely a once in a lifetime thing. You will never get that feeling back. Yeah, you can go play it now. You know it's a good game. You know it's going to be a good time. But you're never going to get that feeling again of being scared and just like, yo, what was that? You know?
Like, yeah, exactly.
For the game to establish it that early on spoke to its roots, like you were mentioning with the movies and the inspirations and where the game was going. Because nowadays we are starved, I want to say, of experiences like this.
Yeah.
There's no real horror anymore. I don't know if you can name a few. If you can, please let me know. And that goes for the audience as well, too. If you guys know any good horror games, please. Because
especially.
Exactly. And I feel like it was true survival horror. It was true like tension, atmospheric. And here's the thing too, when I first was introduced to Dead Space, it was also with a friend too, and he was telling me about it, and I'm the type of guy that gets interested in story. So he was saying these things, they're transforming people on a ship and it has to do with some stone. I'm like, I'm gonna check it out. But my first experience was with the comic. I didn't even play the game. I don't know
if you... Yeah, the digital comic. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, the digital comic. And it's crazy good. And the way that they were going about that comic, it was also in that same way where it was just like, it was creepy. It was silent. It was just... It had moments where it just paused and just made
It was unsettling.
It was very unsettling. And I couldn't help it. I was like, yo, I gotta see what's gonna happen next. And so I feel like that's where it started for me, and that's what Dead Space starts off with. It starts off with like, yo, what happened? All this noise, all this shit going on in the ship, you know, because they give you a brief, correct me if I'm wrong, they give you like a briefing of what happened, and they're going to the ship, right? They're like, oh, you're about to board the Ishimura, this, and that. I don't really remember. It's been a long time. Maybe you could elaborate on it.
So Isaac takes the job because his ex-girlfriend at the time is on the ship, and there's word that the Ishimura is not sending, you know, radio transmissions back, so they're sending, you know, a reconnaissance team, you know, to see if there's any repairs to be made. And then when you get there, you realize that, like, the CEC, the Coalition of Mining and stuff like that, they knew that this marker was on this planet. Mm. And they sent the ship there to retrieve it and bring it back, because it was like an exact copy of, like, the black marker that exists on Earth. You know, and then, like, for your first time playing, you're like, wait, what? There's more than one of these stone things? Like,
spoiler alert, like, by the way.
You know, like, there's more than one of these things? And, like, then it just big ass rabbit hole from there.
Oh, you know? Man. And that goes into the other games, which I'll get into later on. But, you know, going into when you first started playing the game, how did you feel about the controls? How did you feel about, you know, the characters? Because Isaac doesn't even talk in this game. Does he even have one line?
That is a talking point that I definitely want to bring up. So I talk with my friend about this all the time. So me and my friend Ed, we like to talk about Dead Space and things we want to see with the remake coming out. Oh. You know, one of our gripes with the original game was that we felt like there were times where Isaac should have spoke. Like, spoiler alert, when the betrayal happens with Kendra, like, bro, if I was Isaac, I would be cussing her out. like, you fucking bitch. Like, I would be going in, you know, like, or there were just times where I was like, I feel like Isaac needs to speak here.
Very,
like,
interesting. Very interesting.
Need to hear from him here. I'm not talking like Dead Space 2 where he talks all the time. Mm-hmm. Here and there. You know, that is one of, I guess, the few gripes I had with the original. Controls, though, comparing it to Dead Space 2, because this is a thing we talk about a lot, too, is like Dead Space 2 is very quick. Isaac feels a little bit smooth, faster.
Yeah, yeah.
Smoother, for sure. You know? In the first one, he's slow, like really slow. And like he feels like he's got weight in his step, like he's not experienced, like he doesn't know what he's doing. And I feel like that plays a part in, like, creating that factor of fear. You know, you have these things that are jumping off the walls, they're climbing on the ceiling, they're coming through the vents, they're running at you, you know.
Full, like, speed. Full speed.
Yeah, full speed. They're full sending it, you know. And Isaac controls like a piece of dung, you know. He's clunky, you know.
Very clunky. You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I feel like that is good. Something that Resident Evil 2, the remake, does very well is that when you're sprinting, Leon and Claire do not move fast at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they move really slow when they're sprinting. And sometimes it feels like, I'm not getting away from this liquor. Like, I'm dead, you know?
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap, you know? Like, I walked in the room, the zombies are making noise. X is here. Now I'm making noise. The liquors are alerted.
You're not supposed to be making noise, period.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden I got some zombie in the corner going, ah. You know, like, so I think games that do that, especially even if it's unintended, you know, because it's like it was like the first Dead Space. I feel like that was a good thing. Like him feeling clunky and slow. It definitely added to the tension of it all. Like, yeah.
I wanted to ask, don't you think that him not speaking added to the tension, or it took away from it?
I feel like it, I think it's like a double-edged sword, because I think I like when Isaac is quiet, especially when you're exploring the ship, when you have to get from one point of the ship to the other. I like those moments where it's just silence, and it's just you and the ship and what you hear around you. I feel like that's something that pulled me out of Dead Space 2 a little bit. Isaac would speak sometimes.
Yeah, he's constantly speaking to like whoever's on the radio or whatever he is.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I didn't need that. My hope is that with the remake that they keep those moments of silence.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially where you're going, you're just moving through the ship. Because those are really where the experiences are made.
Oh, absolutely. Even when you're in the zero-G sections, you can hear him breathing.
Yeah.
And he's losing his oxygen. That was attention in itself. And there's no music out there.
And it's unsettling. Yeah, there's no music. Yeah, exactly. When you're in when you're in space too, it's like quiet, dead quiet.
And that's what I love. That's what I loved about this game as well too. The way that it was just setting everything up. It has no music, but it's funny because the game has a funny thing where when you're fighting something big, the music gets big. Like the first time you, I think you fight like the... I forget what they're called. Brute. Yeah, they're like tanks from Left 4 Dead. That's how I remember. Yeah,
exactly.
But the first time it like breaks through, the music just explodes because it's telling you, yo, you about to get into some shit, man.
Yeah, you about to get slapped up.
It keeps it that way for the whole game. You know, the music will change its tone, but for the most part, I love the fact that it's quiet. I love the fact that you just don't know.
There's this really specific moment in the first game that I think is really plays off of what we're talking about, that quietness, where there's that enemy, you know, the enemy, the separator, where like you break off a limb and it falls to the floor and all the limbs are all over the place. They're crawling. Yeah. That first time that you hear it, it's like a howl, you know?
It like turns the corner, right?
Yeah, like, you can hear it howling, and it's awful, bro. You know?
Oh, my God. No, totally. Like, and it's good that you bring up the enemies. Like, what did you think about the enemies?
Oh, I think they're awesome. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I feel like they're just so... When you look at them, you're like, damn, that transformation has got to be awful. You know? Like, that's got to be terrible. The jaws like split open, there's arms coming out of the intestines, like,
oh man, just everywhere.
All of them are disgusting, like the ones plastered against the wall, the guardians, like they're... how does that even happen? how did we get here?
I guess the person died against the wall or something, and just
bro, he's like a booger on the wall. You know? like it's funny because I talked to my girlfriend about this like sometimes, and she's like, they're gross. Like, they're disgusting. Like,
oh,
don't show me them. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
You can't help it. The first time you encounter it, those just will chop your head off, right? Like,
bro,
mess you up.
I tell my boys all the time, they're like, yo, we lived in Dead Space. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm out. I'm done. Give me the pistol. I'm done. They're like, you're not gonna fight. I'm like, bro, no.
Look
hello?
At some things.
We're done. We're dead. Look.
Do you see how fast those things move, bro? Do you?
Yeah, I'm not running away from that. Yeah, nah, I'm out. You know.
It's funny you mentioned the pistol. What did you feel about the guns in the game? Because I felt like they were a huge part of the game.
Okay, so this is another minor complaint.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay.
I love how they do the weapons. I love how all of the weapons are mining tools outside of like one.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, all of them are mining tools outside of the pulse rifle because it's like a security rifle for like the security officers.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah, all of them. What? Yeah, they're all mining tools. It's so cool. And it fits the tone of it because, you know, they were mining the planet for quote unquote mining it for resources, but we know that was
a lie. Right.
You know. The game, I feel like when I was playing, even though I loved all the designs of the weapons, except for the flamethrower. I felt like the flamethrower could have done a little more. but I felt like the weapons sometimes were too strong. I feel like a game that does weapons very well is, once again, the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Well, that game's perfect,
you know, like that game is good as hell. You know, I think what's so good about it is I could lay 7 headshots into a zombie and he's still not dead. And I'm like, bro, why are you not dead? This gun sucks. You know, like, not counting the Magnum and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, like the base pistol is so bad, yeah. You know, that like, it's not even worth killing the zombies in that game because you feel so weak, and that's mm-hmm. so awesome. That's such a cool feeling.
That is,
And I feel like that Dead Space could use that. The guns, I think, are designed beautifully. I think they're awesome. I think they're super unique. But my one complaint was that they felt very strong.
Let's get into something there real quick, because you definitely are making a good point. Because I want to get into the topic of either it being survival horror or action survival horror, whatever you want to call that other subgenre, because it started off with Resident Evil 4. Funny enough, I think this game got some inspiration from Resident Evil 4 too.
Yes, it did.
And in Resident Evil 4, that's where, I mean, people can argue that the Resident Evil series went action-based even before Resident Evil 4, but during Resident Evil 4, because Resident Evil 4, it's not horror, right? Action survival horror. Let's just call it that. So I want your opinion, because you're mentioning you feel very powerful, and that's one of the, you know, key things that a lot of action survival horror had, right? Where it's like, you are all powerful. All the guns that you get, everything you can, because Leon's a fucking, he's a superhuman in that game, okay? You feel mad powerful as Leon with all his guns, right? So I want your opinion on this whole survival horror. What makes survival horror and what makes this action horror? And is Dead Space a survival horror or a action survival horror?
So I think what makes a game survival horror, well, at least when I hear survival horror, the things that I think about are like resource management, mm-hmm. Ammo economy, like being very limited, like bad. Like, I'm always looking for ammo. Every engagement I get into with enemies that kill me, I'm thinking to myself, is it worth it, like, for me to fight this right now? Like, I want to question myself, like, how am I going to do this? That's what I think about when I think survival horror. Like, is it better to take this fight right now or to avoid it? And if I avoid it, am I just going to get myself into a worse situation? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to dodge a bullet? Do I kill this brute in front of me, or do I not kill this brute in front of me? You know, like, things like that. Yep. I feel like on the topic of like action horror and survival horror, I feel like Dead Space kind of teeters on both sides sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know,
I feel that
kind of like with Leon, you have like a vendor, you can just stack on the ammo. And I remember playing this as a teenager, being like, oh, I'm good for the next fight. Like,
yeah,
I'm only using the plasma cutter. Yeah, I got all the health packs. I'm only using plasma cutter. I got like 300 bullets. Like, I'm chilling.
Whatever comes my way, I'm blasting, bro. I'm unloading.
Get blasted up. Yeah, exactly. I felt there were not enough moments where I was struggling to deal with a certain situation. I feel like that's really important to note too, is like,
absolutely,
moments where you're struggling to deal with something. That's a big thing. Yeah, I feel like for that, Dead Space 1, it's kind of like a little bit of both, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It definitely has that survival aspect to it.
It does, because
to an extent.
Yeah, to an extent, right? Because like you mentioned, right, you got the store, you got enemies dropping ammo for you, right? And mm-hmm. currency. And then you have just a plethora of ways to dispatch enemies. You can even use their own limbs, which in itself is a very good dynamic. It's a very good mechanic in the game.
Yeah, it was cool.
But it also takes away from the fact that I can use basically anything and not be afraid of what's in front of me. Now, that's not to say that the game, like you were saying, doesn't have horror moments, because it does. Like when you were talking about the dude with the screeching noise and, you know, hearing Isaac breathe in certain situations, you can't listen to the enemies and the vents and stuff. But for the most part, I personally feel that it does lean more towards the action rather than the survival horror. And I agree with you on your points too. The struggle is definitely the biggest thing about survival horror. for me. Like, if I kill this guy right now, right, is it worth to kill him? Because what if I come back to this room and he's going to be there again? So I might as well get, you know, like, you have to ask yourself these questions. In Dead Space, you just clear out a room and that's it.
You just kill him, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's not to say it's bad. It's just it, what we want for survival horror, it's not it. Now, again, it's not to say it's bad. Going back to the, like, atmosphere thing, what I like about Dead Space, right, is that, so for example, you know how it shows Isaac's health, right? The game never really takes you out of the atmosphere besides the fact that you are buying at the shop. Other than that, though, you're always flowing and always in that element of you can get attacked. And it feels kind of scary because even when you open your inventory, you can get attacked.
Yeah.
And the health, instead of plopping like a health bar on the side of the screen, right, where it could take up space and...
It's all on his back.
It's all on his back, yeah. So the game never really pulls you out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get into the topic of experience, right? And this is big, and I want to tie it into, you know, your film career and all this stuff, because I have a huge opinion about games nowadays that maybe you can elaborate on, maybe you could change my opinion or just get some thoughts out there about it. But I feel like a lot of the games nowadays are more experiences rather than games. So I wanted to...
So you mean like cinematic experiences?
Cinematic experience. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, with you and this background, first I want to tie into your background of film with gaming. How did you get into film and how does it tie into your gaming career and all that stuff? Because I know the thing in Dead Space, but could you elaborate that on that a little bit more?
Yeah. So how I really got into film, my family has always been like involved in some sort of like artistic fashion in a way, at least on my mom's side. My sister, you know, has always been an actress and she's always tried to get me involved in acting and films and movies. And I remember as a kid, I, you know, was never really too interested in movies. And my grandfather at the time was like, "Don't worry, I got a movie for you." And he pulled out the VCR tape, put it in the box, and it was Godzilla vs. Gigan. That was like the first movie I remember watching as a kid. And I was hooked. I was like, "Yo, Godzilla, that's my boy. You know, nobody else. You think you're Godzilla's boy? No. We're tight like that. No, you know." Like, and even to this day, I'm still like a diehard Godzilla fanboy.
That's dope.
Yeah, yeah. I love Godzilla. You know,
I really like Godzilla too, actually.
Like, it's sometimes it's so corny, but like, the monsters, bro. Like, that's what I'm there for.
Yeah, dude, and they got like so much lore behind them too. You can read up on all the creatures.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
It's a very interesting universe.
Yeah. That's what kind of got me into movies at a young age. I, you know, after that moment, I was like, got to see all the Godzilla movies ever. Any kaiju film, I got to see it. Yeah, you know? As I grew older, like, it started to branch into, you know, like, comedies. And I'd be like, comedies or whatever. Then horror films. That's when I discovered John Carpenter and stuff like that. I wasn't convinced that the film industry is something that I had wanted to get involved in because, you know, it's like something so like hard to even be a part of. The entertainment industry is very difficult and demanding. And I remember thinking to myself, like a kid and growing up as a teenager being like, "Nah, it's not worth it. I'm not going to be able to do that." But one day I just met the right person and it was a teacher at my old high school. And she just put a camera in my hand and she was like, "All right, go shoot a short film for class." I think right there was the moment where I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to do this for the rest of my life. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I want to do this. Like, this is what I want to do. Like, me and my sister are alike in the way that, like, when we have our eyes set on something, it's like, No. Nothing's going to stop us from doing like what we want to do. That right there, I think, was the moment that I was like, this is what I want to get involved with. I want to get involved in film because I was able, not only did I spend like a good portion of my life experiencing cinema, but for the first time, I was able to create an experience. And even though it was a really bad one, because I didn't know how to make a real movie, you know? It was a high school, like, really shoddy, like, Sony camera. Like, it was really bad, you know? And even looking at it, I showed it to my boys not too long ago. They're like, dude, this is amazing. It's so bad. It's good. You know? Like, what is this? Who is that? What are you doing? I don't even know what the story is, you know?
Oh, man. Gotta love to hear that, man.
Yeah. That's definitely what got me into cinema.
You know, bringing it back to what I said in the beginning of the podcast and how you were basically explaining that story, you were basically saying, yo, this is what I want to do. And just, you know, just being around you and just looking at you from afar, like how you took Smash, I feel like that's just the person that you were. Like, no, I'm going to do this. And when you said that about Smash, like you fucking went and did it. And that's what it takes. What it takes for a lot of things. You know, you can't let fear, you can't let other people telling you, hey, you know, it's hard or, you know, it's impossible to get in this. No, I'm going to do this shit.
I'm going to do it. Yeah.
And that's a big thing in itself to take away for any listener, for anybody. You know, if you want to do something, you fucking go do it. You know,
like literally the only thing stopping you is you. Obviously, it's hard. I'm not going to say it won't be hard because it is, you know, like
you're going to suck.
Yeah, I would be lying if I said that right out of college that I got a job because like I did kind of, but it fell through immediately. And then I was stuck and I was like, dude, what do I do? It'd be a while to find my footing, especially in this industry. And even then it's still, you know, it's shaky sometimes, especially with COVID and how that affected the industry.
I can't even imagine.
Oh, dude, it was bad. And still, it's still bad. You push through it. Wasn't easy, but it's some of the most rewarding work I think I've ever done. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes like you're working 14, 16 hour days just to get up at 5 a.m. to do it again the next day. Sometimes you don't get a day off. Like sometimes you're working 7 days a week. It'd be like that sometimes.
And that's what it takes.
It's rewarding though, you know, and it's some of the most fun that I've ever done. Like when I'm working like in the industry, I'm like, this is my job. Like I'm doing this. Like this is so cool.
Ain't no feeling like that. I love it. Exactly. And I want to tie it into your gaming experiences as well too. How does it all fit together? How does it all like work?
With my gaming experiences, like how cinema like creates an experience for you, games do that as well. Games and cinema are very much alike in that regard, where like they provide an experience for you. They provide like a story, something for you to really get invested in. And I think that's also why I really enjoy games. Sometimes even more than movies, you know?
They're very interesting.
Like some of the best cinematic experiences I've had have been from games. Like the Last of Us, the first one, like that is a cinematic experience. That game is insane, you know, like especially for when it came out, like that was wild to bring that to the point where, you know, how do I feel about games is like more cinematic experiences rather than being games. You know, I feel like, you know, it's a double-edged sword, you know, because for a lot of people, games sometimes are an escape. They're a break from like the stresses of the world, and sometimes you just want to hop on, get on Apex, get on Fortnite, get on whatever, you know, and just relax and play with your boys, have a good time. Or maybe when you sink your teeth into a story game that's like got really fucking good gameplay, you know. But other times you want to get lost in like a really deep narrative, like The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2. And sometimes it can be a little bit too much, you know, that cinematic experience. I'm going to throw a game, for example, Metal Gear Solid 4. That game is phenomenal. It's so good. But my biggest gripe with it is that, god damn, some of those cutscenes, dude, there's a cutscene that's like, it's like over an hour long. It's like an hour and 10 minutes.
Fucking insane.
And I'm like, when do I get to play the game? You know? Why couldn't this be happening while I'm playing the game? You get out of like a really cool boss fight. It's so cool. And then it's like, enjoy the next hour and 10 minutes. And if you skip it, you're not going to know what the hell's going on.
Oh, like, my God. Totally.
And it, and it's like serious exposition dump, and it's like, God damn, you know?
I'm glad that we're talking about this today, because I've been feeling like this for a while. Like, one of my games, I don't know if you played it recently, Resident Evil Village.
Yes, I did play Village.
Okay. All right. I'm probably going to do a whole episode on this game, because I'm probably the biggest Resident Evil fan. Everyone knows I'm like the guy. Like, I love Resident Evil. And I fucking hate Resident Evil Village.
Low key, I thought that game is definitely a culprit of the whole, like, more cinematic experience rather than game.
Exactly, bro. Oh, there. Look, let me just bring this one scene up where, you know, you're in the house and they take all your weapons from you and you see the baby. The thing in the basement, and it's fucking creepy as shit. I get it. It's good. It's good. But my whole gripe with the whole game, and especially that part and a lot of even the beginning of the game, and a lot of games do this nowadays, is like, I feel like I'm not playing a game. It's on autopilot. It's like cutscene after cutscene, and then I'll play for like 5 minutes and it takes me away from the game, and I'll watch a cutscene and it does the things for me. It's like on rails, or there's another way to put it, but it's just like
it's like a rail game. You're on a ride, essentially. Yeah. Like, exactly. It's like a virtual experience rather than you going through it yourself.
You know, and tying it back into Dead Space didn't do that. A lot of games back in the days didn't do that. When it was horror full through and through. It didn't take you out the experience. There's like, what, 4 or 5 cutscenes in Dead Space?
not even. It's all like just happening in front of you.
Exactly. Never takes it away from you. Never, you know, puts you in this state of you're not in control. You're always in control of Isaac.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of games are doing that nowadays. Like, maybe you could elaborate on it. Maybe, you know, why? Or, like you said before, is it replacing film? What's going on?
So I feel like some games in that sense are trying to emulate what film does, especially Village in some cases, you know, where like, okay, there are these moments where Ethan just speaks, and I'm like, dude, what the hell did you just say? Like, there's a boss fight, and you beat the boss, and she goes, oh, you're the one, you're cursed to wander a sea of despair for eternity, blah! And, like, she's dead. And then it's just a pause, and then Ethan goes, you're the one who's cursed. And it's like, bro, where the hell did that come from? Like, who says that? Like, who says that? Or like, there's another fight where you kill something and it's like, blah, no. And then he goes, I hate bugs. And it's like, bro, what the fuck? And you're like, yeah, I hate bugs.
Totally, like, dude. Totally. Like,
what the hell is this?
Like, you know? I'd be out of breath and be like, fucking bitch.
I hate bugs. You're the one who's cursed. Like, yeah, good. You got him, Ethan.
It is so distracting. It is so, like, it just like pulls your hand. Like, get out of it. You know?
Yeah. It really feels like something that, like, I would see in, like, a really bad movie sometimes.
Like a B-list movie, right?
Like a B-list movie. Yeah. And I'd be like, what the fuck? What did I just watch? You know?
Oh my God.
I feel like a Resident Evil Village is definitely a culprit of that. There's a few other games that are like that, but too.
Like you said, Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, Metal Gear. Cyberpunk 2077 as well. This game had so much potential, by the way, and they dropped the ball, like, so hard.
Oh my God, that's a whole other episode. Jesus.
There's this amazing character named Jackie, and in the beginning of the game is great, but there's this amazing character named Jackie, and he's supposed to be like your best friend, and you believe it, and you're going through it with him. But then all of a sudden, like, you know, you and Jackie are like, let's go and live life in the city. You know, let's be one with the city, you know, like, like, fuck everybody else. Let's do our own thing. And you're like, yeah, let's do it, bro. We're bros. We're homies. And then you're hit with a montage of all these experiences that your character's having with Jackie. And you're like, dude, when do I get to have these experiences with the character?
Oh,
and then
my God.
Before it's even over, like before you even know it, it's done. Like, no more Jackie. Why wave it in front of my face? Ooh, you could have done this. but we didn't do it. You know?
Turned into a cinematic experience like, here. Enjoy.
Exactly. And it's always done in the moments that, like, it feels like it cheapens things. Like, I want to do that.
Totally. We mentioned it a couple of times too. Even God of War, the recent one that I've been, you know, I've been experiencing, sometimes it feels like an experience. But here's the thing with that game though, like, it'll do it and then just smack you right in the middle of a fight. Like, all right, yes. Big ass moment. You see a big ass dragon and you're like, oh shit. You're about to drop me right on the foot of this dragon. I'm about to clip at his nails or something, you know, like,
yeah.
Acceptable, but it's still doing that thing. Now, I want to tie it again back into Dead Space. Are you scared for the remake that it will do this exact same thing?
Seeing what little they showed in that like that demo reveal, I don't think I'm afraid necessarily. I think and hope that we'll still retain that feeling of control over Isaac, even, you know, in those moments where things are happening, you know, like that's like you said, that's a big thing. You're always in control of Isaac's no matter what, like, because they try to really make the player feel like you're in Isaac's shoes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we won't lose that. My worry is that we're gonna have some Ethan scenarios where, like, Isaac says something, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? What are you saying? You know, like, why would you say that? Yeah, exactly. You know, so I'm not worried, but at the same time, I'm like, careful about it. You know, yeah. I'm like, they could fuck it up this way. Totally. Let's just hope they don't.
I feel the same way.
So
I told you, I don't know when this.
I'm carefully optimistic.
Right. And I'm going to be that way too, because I can't wait for this thing. I really can't.
Yeah.
And I have to also tie this into the other ones. 2 and 3, just your honest opinions on them, really, because
I got some opinions. Opinions. Okay. Yeah, because like I said before, me and my friend Ed, we talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Literally all the time. So I think there are things that 2 and 3 do wonderfully. So a lot of people that I speak with are like, yo, 2's the scariest one, 2's the best one. I'm like, nah. 2's the one that's more action heavy.
Yeah.
2 is like, I like the concept of being in the middle of a necromorph outbreak as it's happening.
Yeah.
But at times it's like, bro, what the Isaac's like, yo, I've done this before, bro. I've been through it. I've been pumping iron with necromorphs. You know, we go back. You know, it's like, yeah, I get it, but is a little too powerful. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Sometimes there were those moments where it's like, all right, well, this is just too much. I think there are moments where, like, it's cool to see Isaac flying through space, you know, back down to the sprawl, but, like, you feel less in control of it and more like you're on a rail, like you're just being taken through a ride. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really
stick the landing.
It doesn't stick. It doesn't stick the landing. It doesn't feel like Dead Space.
Totally.
I tell everyone that I talk to about it that I still think that the first Dead Space is the best one. I still say it to this
highly
day.
Agree. That's not to say that the second one is a bad game. The second one is great game.
Yes. I still think it's a great game, but great for different reasons as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think that some of the enemy, like, the second game has some of the best enemy designs they put out.
Yeah.
You know, there are things I'd like to see them do more with some of the enemies. Like, I feel like the Stalkers was a missed opportunity. Like, they're set up as, like, well, they're based off of Velociraptors from Jurassic Park. So that's why you'll see them barking at each other.
Interesting.
Because they're communicating to each other that, like, where you are and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember there was an interview when Dead Space 2 was coming out. Their initial concept for the Stalkers was that they would follow you through the city and that they would be like a over-looming, like, threat that would follow you around the sprawl. But then they ended up being left as, like, this, they were left in a room, and that's where you'd fight them. You'd see the layout of the room and be like, okay, cool, Stalkers.
Yep.
You know, I feel like that was a missed opportunity, but obviously you can kind of, like, lay that out to, like, hardware limitations and AI limitations at the time. But I hope that we do see some of the enemies from Dead Space 2 put into Dead Space 1, because I think some of them would fit perfectly, like the Puker, definitely the Stalkers, if they could find a way to fit that in, you know, like that'd be cool. Make it something that actually stalks you. But I don't think Dead Space 2 is bad at all. I definitely think it's a great game. It definitely goes a little harder in the action department.
It does. And it feels again. Yeah. It feels like you're a superhero. It feels more like Resident Evil 4. Yeah.
But Dead Space 3.
It's funny because we haven't mentioned Dead Space 3, and I feel like we feel the same way about it. But I want to hear your opinion on it.
I have some controversial opinions about Dead Space 3.
Oh man,
I funny enough don't hate it.
Okay.
I don't hate it.
Okay. You know? Okay. All right.
There are things about it that I think it does great. The survival aspect, mm-hmm. talking about like having to scrounge for things to make ammo.
True.
You know, you have to make guns. You know, it kind of leaned a little bit more into the whole fact that Isaac is an engineer. You can make your own weapons, which was, I thought that was really cool.
Was cool too. You're right.
I felt like it was a little too strong at points. Like, bro, putting acid rounds on a Magnum that's shooting off limbs in one bullet. I'd be like, all right, this is too much. But it definitely leaned more into the survival aspects that I liked, mechanically speaking. Right. Now, it doubles down when it comes down to the whole action part, you know, throwing in the human enemies and Isaac rolling all over the place.
At you and stuff. I'm like, damn.
What really took it out for me was when a necromorph takes over a human body and then it picks up the gun and is shooting the gun. I was like, all right, no. This is
Evil 4, man.
You know, I was like, bro, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know, I felt like it had some of the best story beats that Dead Space has had in a while. Mm-hmm. I thought the concept of the Brethren Moon was really cool and really interesting. And you know,
that I find that very, very interesting as well. And I don't think they elaborate on it enough.
They didn't. They were just like, there were planet-sized necromorphs like in deep space. And whenever like a new Brethren Moon was made, they'd wake up and basically like purge the universe, you know?
Fucking insane. And I thought that when I was learning about it, because there are some moments in the game where towards the end where they're explaining everything. And I was at the edge of my seat. I was like, no fucking way. You know, I was like, this is getting crazy. As in the terms of the story. You're right. I thought the story was fantastic.
The weakest parts of the game is like early on to like the middle of the game. And then in the end, it starts to pick up in terms of story beats and stuff like that. And really, it really pulled me in narratively at that point. I felt like what Dead Space 3 did very well was the idea that it wasn't just like when you're in space hovering over the planet. I forgot the name of the planet. Tau Volantis.
Okay.
So when you're exploring the ships above Tau Volantis and you're exploring the, you know, the SS Roanoke, there's multiple ships. Like it's not just that one ship. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool because it was like, it's not just, it made me think to myself like, wow, how cool would it be if it wasn't just the Ishimura, if there were like smaller ships that you could explore next to the Ishimura that were there. I thought that was cool. Like these things looked like kind of like planet crackers in a way, you know, there were multiple of them. And I thought it added to the whole exploration factor, even though it ended up just being like a shit ton of necromorphs inside and all that. I thought the concept of having multiple areas outside of just the main one that you're in was very cool.
I thought so too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something I hope that they build on in the remake. Cause I know that they said that there's a bunch of like cut content from the original game. Like
really?
There's a bunch of cut enemies, cut areas. So have you ever played like the Wii game, the Dead Space game for the Wii? It's called like Dead Space Extraction.
Yeah. That's, you know where that is, bro? That's in
the backlog.
The backlog. And that shit, I got that shit deep ago.
Like that game was made with a lot of these cut areas from the original Dead Space.
Interesting. Wow.
There's a whole sewer system in the Ishimura. There's like a separate hydroponic system. A lot of really cool things that were left out of the original game, especially enemies as well. Nice. And some bosses. And so like I'd love to see, my hope is that they add on to the original Dead Space while not completely changing it, you know,
not like
these cut areas could be like optional places for you to go on the ship, you know, that you can totally miss.
You're definitely right on that. I'm excited for this project. So let's see where they take it. You're taking it slowly with it, but we're going to see. I'm going to wrap this up soon. This might kind of be a weird question, but I also, you know, just want to get it out there. Like, do you think there's something you can take away from the whole Dead Space experience? Something that it taught you, something that a lesson in the game? Like, I might be stretching it because it's just, you know, it's fucking aliens and stuff, but.
Yes, I do think that there is a lesson there, especially in the second one. So the whole, like, first two games, even the third one to an extent, you know, Isaac is always, like, trying to, like, save someone. And he's trying to find Nicole, you know, and he's trying to, in the second game, he's trying to forgive himself for what happened to Nicole. And the marker's preying on that trauma, you know?
Right.
And he... towards the end of it all, he realizes, like, in order, I hate to be corny about it, but, you know, in order to find, like, peace, like, that inner peace, he really had to give up the thing that he wanted the most to be steady. Especially in the second one, you know, he gave up, you know, Nicole, even though she's dead at that point. He gave it up. He was like, I have to let go of you. He let go. And even in the third game at the end, he wants nothing more than to be with Ellie at the end of it all. But he realizes that, like, that can't be true. That can't happen.
Yeah.
And he has to give up the thing that he wants the most in the end, even though that's not what he wants. That's definitely not what he wants.
Yeah, that's fucking rough, man.
Sometimes in life, you really do, like, have to give up the thing that you want the most to be steady, you know?
Yeah, to be steady or go for whatever it is or save the fucking world.
Yeah, exactly. And there's one more thing. It's a quote from Isaac, actually, in the third game.
Oh, I know what you're about to say, bro.
Just pulled at my heartstrings. I was like, that's my boy. He was like, good men mean well. We just don't always end up doing
it. Oh, my God. I think that's almost towards the end of the game.
Yeah, and he says that to Carver because Carver's also struggling at letting go of what happened to his family. And that was like, bro... that's like one of the best video game quotes I ever heard. I resonate with that so hard.
First time I heard that quote, I put that shit on Facebook. I was like, nope.
I'm
beating my chest to that. That's real men shit, all right?
So that's what I would take away from it, you know?
Dope. I feel you on that, man. I don't want to leave. So I'm also going to ask you if you got any last words to say about your career choice, you know, getting into the film industry, or any last words about Dead Space and just the universe and all that stuff.
Anybody's interested in getting into the film industry, it's awesome. It's always evolving. It's fun. It's cool, but it's hard. It's so fucking hard. God damn it, it's so hard. It's worth it. And I don't think I would have chose anything else to get into other than this, you know. The lows are low, I can say that, but the highs are extremely high, and there's always an experience. And I feel like sometimes that's what life is all about, like experiences. Like, you know, you really blink, and then all of a sudden you're 27 years old and you're like, dude, I was literally 4 the other day. I literally woke up 4 and now I'm 27. What the fuck happened?
With a mountain of games to play and no time.
You know? And for people who like did want to do something but not sure, dude, just that ass, take that lead, like, because 9 times out of 10 you won't regret it. You know, it'll be hard and it'll be frustrating, but when you get there, when you finally do it, it is so worth it.
It's gonna, you know? It's gonna hit you, it's gonna beat you down, but you're gonna learn a lot.
Yeah, nothing in life is free, you know, and nothing is given to you in life for free. Like, but when you really fight for something that you really enjoy, it's so worth it. So I would say, deadass, go chase your dreams, do it. We're like, it's just so worth it. Life is way too short, just do it.
Listen to your boy, you know? Man, and go play Dead Space.
And play Dead Space, it's so good. Go play Dead Space and go watch The Thing.
Gotta watch The Thing.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh man, no, I really appreciate you for being on the show today, man. It means a lot to me. Talking about your career, talking about Dead Space and all these things, I can't thank you enough. You definitely,
of course, man.
You know, have opened my eyes to a lot of things too about the film industry and about these movies and stuff about the game that I didn't even know about either. So again, on that aspect, thank you so much. And everyone that tuned in today, really take some notes, man. Go for that dream. Go, man, just go run out there and do what you gotta
do.
Yeah,
because Shia LaBeouf status, do it.
Just do it.
Just do it.
This is why this podcast is here too, you know? Just doing it. Might not be the perfect things at times. We might mess up and still gotta get that YouTube channel out there, guys, but we'll get it, I promise. But anyways, you know, if it comes out naturally, if you feel the love, you feel the compassion, the connection, do it, man. And
absolutely,
and nothing else to say, man. Go play Dead Space, go do your thing. And if always, if you guys want to be a part of the Infinite Lives and Games podcast, you can DM me, message me at infinitelivesandgames.com and the Twitch, which is twitch.tv/SethInfinite. And until the next episode, as always, guys, I want you guys to stay healthy, stay safe, and of course, stay infinite.